Today on The Grave Talks, part two of Pretty Gritty Ghosts, Tacoma's Haunted History, a conversation with Chris Dottinger. There's another place in Tacoma I wanted to talk about, Blackwell Mansion. Mm-hmm. Now, this was William and Alice Blackwell's home in the late 1800s.
Yes, 1891.
It's a fantastic home, and it's still standing, and it's big. It looks really big. Could you kind of describe it a little bit?
It's 9,000 square feet of this richly carved Minnesota white oak in a towering mansion right in the downtown of Tacoma. And it has sort of that like luxurious Chicago vibe to it, and was built for these two people that were some of the earliest investors in the idea of Tacoma.
And what was his business to provide him such an enormous, wonderful home?
He was in hospitality, and William and Alice ran the first hotel in the city of Tacoma, were sort of the advocates and stewards for the Northern Pacific Railroad. And when Tacoma was selected to be the terminus of the Transcontinental Railroad's northern branch, Tacoma became the it town.
The
end of the line. And William and Alice were the hotel curators and owners and operators.
And a lot of times back then, the train would stop and people would get off the train and spend the night. And then they would continue on the next day. So they could have made a lot of money.
There was a fortune to be made. And they diversified. They were part of the territorial legislature. They had theaters and banks and libraries, and they deeply invested in the community.
And the house is still standing. Is it now a museum? Can you tour it?
You can tour it with me, but it's leased office space.
Really? That surprises me. I just assumed it was a museum because it's so historical and important to the city.
Oh, yeah, unbelievably so. And I wish that it was, but I'm not there yet.
A lot of times they go in and they take out some of the things that the historical detail, you know, sometimes woodwork's taken out or walls are taken down and they've modernized it in ways that don't make sense. Have they done that with this house?
To a degree, not so much so that it's lost its soul, but it has been used over the years for a variety of things, and some of those uses shine through.
Now, you say you can take tours through there. So do you have a deal with them that you do you kind of do like a historical tour?
Exactly.
Ghost tour, both?
So usually like once a month or so, in partnership with the mansion, I'll offer a tour of that building for people.
See, I would think people would love to get inside of it and see what it looks like.
It's been one of our more popular ones, to be sure.
Do you feel like there is paranormal activity in that mansion?
Oh, I do. I really do.
What do you think's going on there?
Well, William and Alice were really extraordinary as individuals, and both of them passed away inside the mansion. They died there in the 1920s, and when they did, they left everything to their daughter, Ruby Blackwell. And they had decided early on that instead of her living in the house, they were going to donate it to the YWCA. And so from the 1920s until the 1970s, it was a women's shelter for the YWCA.
Oh.
But it had been a refuge before that. When William and Alice built it in 1891, they only lived there for about 2 years before a financial collapse just rock-bottomed Tacoma. And they immediately, even though they lost almost everything except for this mansion, opened their doors and sort of hosted people in need and allowed them to stay there while they were trying to get their lives back together.
My gosh, they were wonderful people.
They were. And over the years, it wasn't just them, but one of their maids who died inside the building. And there is this stewardship of the building that continues. And so, like, over the years, people have experienced some really strange stuff inside, but always in a positive way.
Like, what kind of things have you heard of?
You know, one of my favorites is the building manager, Stevie, had this like set of 8 glasses that came with the building. And when she started managing the space, she found all these things. And one of them was this like set of glassware, but it only had 7 of the 8 glasses in the stand. And she had one night where she was putting it out for an event, and she was like, okay, this weekend I'm going to go home, but when I come back on Monday, I'm going to find the 8th glass, and because it's got to be somewhere inside this building. Came back on Monday, and it was inside the stand.
Oh.
All 8 of them were there. And things like that happen all the time. There's this old, like, wall clock that needs to be wound with a key. And occasionally people will comment on it, and then moments later it'll be wound up and ticking again. I've had a night where I was doing the tour, and some of the electrical is different because it's an 1891 mansion. And there was one light I could not figure out how to turn off. And so as I was going through the floors, I called to my co-guide who was helping close up. And I asked her, I was like, hey, if you find the switch for this light, would you turn it off? And then I went upstairs and I came back and the light was off. And I told her later, I was like, hey, thank you. Where was the switch for that? And she had no idea what I was talking about. She'd been outside the whole time.
It's interesting in that they're very helpful. Like, I'm looking for this glass and I'd really like to find it. Here it is. I would like to turn that light off, but I can't find the switch. I got it. You know what I mean? It's like they're very good hosts is kind of what they are.
They always were. Yeah, and they always were. They were such avid hosts. Like the Blackwells in their time hosted, you know, U.S. Arctic explorers. They hosted Rudyard Kipling. They hosted Mark Twain.
All inside that house.
Yeah.
Wow.
And something, some energy has kept it from change for well over 130 years.
A lot of stories I read, maybe there's some basis to it, but I had read about the couple and that they were really kind. And that they, because I was reading about how they had helped turn their garden into a source of food for the community when everybody was experiencing difficulties. And so I was reading a story that, and they called him a vengeful spirit. And I was like, why? It seems like this was a kind couple.
Absolutely. I would never describe anything in that home as vengeful.
I love that the way you describe it, though. They're just kind of still hosting and still taking care of the guests.
Absolutely.
And helping people. A lot of your guests, do they kind of pick up on activity there?
They do. And it's always been the same. People have felt a very calming presence there, and always as if they were very welcome inside the home. There are some places that we tour where people feel like they're being pushed out or asked to leave, but that's never been the case with the Blackwell.
That's so interesting. I want to go in there so much. And the way to go in there is through your tours.
That's true. So
see,
next time
I love
you're
that.
Around,
okay.
We'll have to make it happen.
You know, I'll do that when I go visit my sister next time.
Nice.
So the one last place I wanted to talk about, because I have nothing like this in the middle of Kansas, the Foss Water Seaport. We don't have anything that compares to that. But what I thought was interesting that when I was reading about it, it's a ghostly maritime-centric tour, covers the Balfour Dock building, and explores everything from mysterious shipwrecks to sightings of sea monsters. And I'm like, what? We do not have sea monsters out here. Not a one.
Count yourself lucky.
Absolutely. That's something I don't think about. But now I will probably go to bed tonight thinking about sea monsters. Tell me a little about the Fosswater Seaport.
It's another just implausible treasure that has existed in space-time, but it is part of what was once the longest wheat warehouse in the world.
Okay, I can relate to the wheat part. We've got that out here.
You know, and Kansas wheat was at one point arriving via train to Tacoma and then being shipped internationally from the port.
Oh, yeah.
And so this building was just over a mile long. And
what?
Over time.
Did you say a mile?
Over a mile.
Oh,
unfathomable, right?
I can't even wrap my brain around that. That is huge.
It was amazing, and it was right on the shoreline, so the ships and the trains could both get within 6 feet of the door. It was the city where rails meet sails. The building that houses the seaport today is the last remaining section of that mile-long warehouse, the only piece that hasn't been destroyed by fire.
I'm interested in the fact that it was all destroyed by fire. What happened?
As I'm sure you know, wheat can be very flammable. Mm-hmm. And so when you're just pouring it inside a wooden building, you're inviting disaster. And so, yeah, over time, a lot of that warehouse was destroyed by successive fires, but brick firewalls prevented this particular portion from being consumed.
So was there some tragedy that went along with it as well, as in loss of life?
There's an unbelievable amount. Because not only has the building housed various tragedies, it has been used as a center for smuggling. There have been some murders that have occurred. There have been loss of life from drowning. But today, it operates as a maritime museum. And inside are a whole series of artifacts attached to different tragedies, including one of my favorite. And so it's just become this like vault for the unheard voices of Tacoma.
Oh, that's interesting. What is your favorite artifact there?
Okay. So in 1899, there was a shipwreck in Tacoma that was in every way mysterious. And a year after that ship vanished, there was a streetcar disaster in Tacoma, where an overloaded streetcar jumped the tracks, rolled down a steep grade, and over 40 people were killed in the incident.
Oh my gosh.
Somebody had the idea to take a piece of the streetcar, like salvaged wood stained with the blood, and carve a replica of the ship that had been lost a year earlier. And it is the most cursed thing in Tacoma.
Really?
Yeah. It is a nightmare-inducing artifact in a little shadow box that just nobody wants it, but currently the seaport has it.
Once again, it's kind of like, Abby, what do you do with it? You know?
Yes.
I guess it's not hurting anybody, but do you feel like it's kind of got this weird energy about it?
Oh my gosh. For me, it feels like when you drop a soda and you know in like that plastic bottle that it's all charged up in there.
Yeah. Don't open
and
it.
Your option.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got to like just slowly, ever so slowly open it to release that pressure.
And you could still get it all over you.
Exactly. I feel like that's what this is.
That's
They're
a good analogy.
Letting that pressure out, letting its presence and story be known. So that it doesn't just charge up in someone's attic.
Right. Do you feel like there are, because I read somewhere about it, that there are ghostly encounters that have happened in like, or ghost activity that's happened in that museum? Do you find maybe attributed to some of these objects that are in there?
I mean, almost every single artifact inside the Seaport Museum is something that was made by hand in Tacoma or used as a boat in Tacoma, or, you know, it's this wood from the region, purposed into someone's livelihood, and now sitting inside the museum. So it is not difficult for me to imagine that each piece in there has been charged with the essence of someone's story.
Yeah, that's just so interesting. And when you put them all together, I sometimes feel like the energy of all those things together doesn't always work well, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. And you never know. It's like lightning for me. You know, they say lightning doesn't come from the sky, but it finds its energy from the ground and then arcs upwards. And I think when you put enough charged items in a space, it becomes a connection point.
So does it seem like, and you do tours of this location as well.
Absolutely.
Do you share quite a few ghost stories with them or paranormal stories?
All the time, people experience stuff inside the building. I think one of the most measurable experiences was the museum at one point put a motion sensor on their back door because there was some concern that people might be coming in or out of the back of the building, even though the door remains locked all the time. And like, I've been there several times where that alarm goes off. It alerts as if someone's coming in or out of the door. But they've put security cameras up. They've like double barred the door. They've done all these things and nothing ever opens the door, but the trigger continues to go off and then like things will move around inside.
Oh, interesting.
It's very strange.
Do you have a location? Because as owner operator, I'm sure you keep quite busy with all of the bookkeeping, with all of the scheduling, with all of the employees and everything like that. But I'm going to guess that every now and again, you get to go take a tour out because I think that would be the fun part of what you do. The stories and the meeting people. Is there a particular location or tour that you do that you're like, yes, that's my favorite one. That's my favorite place to go.
One of my absolute favorites to do is the Fort Steilacoom Park lantern tour.
Oh, tell me about that one.
Fort Steilacoom Park is a city park in Lakewood, Washington, just a little south of Tacoma. The park itself was part of the first military installation for the United States in Washington. It was also and continues to be a cemetery for the first just over 3,000 patients who died in the Washington State Hospital for the Insane, now known as Western State. And so from farmstead to patient cemetery to military fort to, trial grounds for some of the worst atrocities committed against local tribes, it houses the crucible of early Washington history and is paved in blood.
The way you said that just gave me goosebumps. Your delivery, everything was so spot on.
It's just such an unassuming place, but it houses the first lines of Washington's story.
Are you kind of drawn to that area because of the history of it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's such a wonderful launch point to that story and that region and that history. And yeah, it just has an energy to it that's undeniable.
What do you feel when you go there?
Almost like an echo.
Oh,
like that's a like a rhythm that like a melody in my head that I can't quite place.
And that sounds like maybe not terrifying, but maybe a little almost pleasant. But in a creepy way.
It's like being connected to something that feels nostalgic, but I've never experienced before.
I don't know. Maybe you have some past life experience with that area.
There's always that chance.
You don't
But there's
know.
Something that calls me back to it.
Yeah. I always find that to be such a strange feeling when you encounter a place that you feel very, very familiar with, but for no real reason. It's like I shouldn't have this kind of familiarity. I shouldn't have this kind of response to this location, yet I do. And I always,
absolutely,
I'm always fascinated by that because it's like, what is it then?
Right. And it's hard to define.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. If someone is going to come to the Tacoma area, there's so many things, like, because we were talking about with Pretty Gritty Tours, you have so many different kind of tours they can do. And, you know, of course, paranormal, like what we've been talking about. But I think the true crime tours would be really interesting. I don't know why I'm just like every other woman who's totally into true crime, but it's kind of a fascination a lot of us are into these days. I would think would be some really interesting tours as well. That's when you really kind of hear about the worst of the worst a lot of times.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going to guess with you know, what we've just talked about today so far, there's some history when it comes to true crime.
It's an untapped well. You know, we are a home base for some of the nation's most notorious and accomplished serial killers.
And when you say killers, you know, I live in a town where we have one, had one, BTK. But we just had the one, at least that we all know of. But when you say killers, that kind of gives me the jeebs, because especially after everything we've talked about and these mysterious deaths in like Bucoda and, you know, all these things that have happened in that area, and then to have multiple serial killers come out of that area, that's kind of creepy.
Undeniably, you know, and there's actually a book that just came out recently looking at the area's connection to lead poisoning and whether or not that inspired this spat of serial killers.
You know, and you wonder too, like when we were talking about Point Defiance, and it's mysterious and it's dark and it's got almost a its own sort of paranormal presence there. Like there's something else there that you can't put your finger on. The place you were just talking about, Bucoda. You know, when you look at these locations, it's more than just the mansion being haunted. Mm. You know, I love talking about historical locations and hauntings. I love that. But it always makes sense. I see why the couple's tied to the house and tied to the city and why they won't leave. I get that. But, you know, right. It just seems like everything we've talked about today, there's a bigger picture to the hauntings, perhaps, that it could be based in the land.
It's hard to say, but there's definitely something about the region that fertilizes the darkness of some souls.
And again, you just said that in a really creepy way. Fertilizes the darkness of some souls. That was very poetic and very creepy at the same time. Great job, Chris. And you said that with just such conviction. And it gave me the goosebumps all over again.
But well, this is what you can expect from a Pretty Gritty Tour.
That's what I think would be fun about it. You know, because I do love talking about the history of it. And I love that you dive into the history and, you know, educate people about the area. And you can take a sweets tour too, which I would love.
Well, it can't all be darkness.
Right. There's got to be something for grandma when she comes. She might not want to do the paranormal tour. But true. So if you are interested in the Tacoma area or Olympia, Seattle, Tri-Cities, you've got all of them covered, and you can get all kinds of information at your website.
Absolutely.
PrettyGrittyTours.com.
That's the one.
And then you can book through there and everything, correct?
Absolutely. One-stop shop.
See, that's what I think's fun. When you go on vacation, if you're going to that area, number one, it's beautiful.
Hmm.
But if you go into the area, it's just a fun way to learn about the history as well. I like getting spooked. I love doing ghost tours and paranormal things. But you also get a feeling of the history. And you always get such a cool, different look at the history of the city. And so to me, it's more than just a ghost tour or something. You just get more out of it. So I think it would be super fun to do. And I will put a link in the show notes to the website so you can just click right there.
Beautiful.
This was really fun, Chris. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk.
Oh, Carol, it was my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on.
And that wraps up our conversation about Pretty Gritty Ghosts, Tacoma's Haunted History with Chris Dottinger, owner, operator, and tour guide of Pretty Gritty Tours. For more information, visit their website at prettygrittytours.com or find a link in the show notes. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes without commercials, then become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts where you can try it for 3 days free, or you could also sign up at patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us at The Grave Talks, thank you very much for listening.